You're listening to Food Tech Talk, Supply Chain Insights from Farm to Fork, a podcast discussing the latest trends and technology in the food and supplement industries, featuring conversations with regulatory experts, quality and safety champions, and thought leaders across the industry. With your hosts, Lydia Adams and Katie Jones, let's jump right in. Hello, everyone. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Michelle Brydalski, a seasoned professional with over 25 years of experience in the food industry, specializing in food safety, quality assurance, and regulatory affairs. Currently, Michelle is serving as the Vice President of Food Safety, Quality, and Regulatory at Charcuterie Artisans, and she plays a vital role in upholding their commitment to delivering safe and high-quality food products to their consumers, contributing to their reputation as an industry leader. And previously, she worked as the VP of Food Safety, Quality Assurance, Regulatory at Brady Enterprises. And she has also worked as the Director of Suppliers, Food Safety, and Quality Assurance at Rich Products Corporation, and held other quality and regulatory roles at several other organizations in her 25 years, including General Mills and Ready Pack Produce. So welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
You have quite an impressive background. I'd love to dive into it just a little bit more. So if you don't mind just taking me back to the beginning of your career in the food industry and kind of like what initially sparked your interest in this industry.
So honestly, I didn't know that I wanted to have a career in the food industry. I graduated with a bachelor's in chemistry. And from there, I just knew that I kind of liked working in a lab environment. So right out of school, I went to a biotech company and was working in their raw material testing lab and really found that that was kind of my niche. So being from Buffalo, you know, never thinking I would leave Buffalo, I General Mills is a big factory in the city. And so they had an opening for a third shift lab tech. And so since I like working in the lab, I decided to apply for the position and got it. And really working for a bigger company, it kind of really opened my eyes to kind of what's out there. To be honest, I honestly had no idea there was a career in food science or food safety or quality. I just kind of liked working in the lab. And so started there as, like I said, the third shift lab tech and just, you know, was working with my boss and saying, hey, I'd like to learn more and do more. And it really just kind of sparked my interest in it and my passion and drive for making great product, consistent product, doing what's right for the customer. And that's kind of where it started off and how I got my career going.
It's a great place to start.
It was a great place to start. I mean, and I will have to say, General Mills did a great job at growing and developing me and pushing me to my limits. And I would have to credit them and the company for the development that they gave to me and the opportunities they gave to me. But really, they pushed me and challenged me and really allowed me to kind of grow. And I was moving around every couple of years to different facilities and doing different roles and increasing levels of responsibility. And it just kept growing.
Fantastic. And you mentioned, you know, the passion that developed. So is that what you feel maybe has motivated you to stay in this industry and committed to this mission that you started so long ago?
Yeah, I know. For me, really, I love the idea of being the advocate for the customer and really being passionate about protecting the customer. That kind of has always resonated with me. And, you know, from a food safety side of it, really kind of that I'm a big fan of law and order. And so to me, it's kind of like, you know, a crime scene when you're trying to digest and figure out things. And you're a detective, really, when you're looking at things and trying to make things better. So that coupled with the drive to kind of protect the consumer and be the advocate for the consumer is kind of what's really kept me going my entire career.
I love that. That's awesome. And so in your current role as Vice President of Food Safety, Quality, and Regulatory at Charcuterie Artisans, what do you think is the most fulfilling or how do you fulfill that passion there in your current role?
Right now in my current role, I would say, you know, obviously I always have that drive to protect the consumer and the customer. But I would say right now at this level in my role, it's really how am I developing the next level of food safety career professionals? Like I love challenging my team. I love helping them grow and seeing them kind of build what I always call their toolbox, you know, build their toolbox of food safety and quality technical skills. And so I love the idea of being able to grow that next generation and see them kind of take on and lead the same level I do.
That's such a great point. I love that you said that. And I know we're going to get into pathogen recalls today, but one last question for you. So can you tell us about Charcuterie Artisans and kind of what the company does and any kind of fun, exciting things going on there?
So charcuterie artisans, we are an Italian dry cured meat producer. So we make things like Italian prosciutto, salami, sopressata, mortadella, coppa. So just a variety of different Italian dry cured meats and some cooked, obviously. So basically anything you're putting on your charcuterie board, the meat wise, is something that we make. And so it's been a really great adventure working here. I'm coming up on 3 years now. And really for me, I will have to say the process by which you manufacture this product is probably the most technically complex that I've had to work with. So for me, that's been awesome to continue to learn and grow my own technical skill set. But really, we were fortunate during COVID that this category seemed to really kind of grow and take a new turn. People were eating more at home, you were socializing more at home, and charcuterie kind of blew up. So we've been on the positive side of COVID, if you can say, as far as, you know, our business goes. And yeah, we continue to grow and there's a demand for our products. So, I mean, we have no shortage of customers coming and asking to purchase our product.
I think it's funny you said that because I was like, I think I've had probably more charcuterie boards in the last couple of years than before. So I love that. I love that. Okay, so I know you have a lot of expertise in this area we're about to discuss. So let's dive into pathogen recalls. You know, it's a pretty big deal in the industry right now. What is the significance of pathogen recalls in the food industry, especially in relation to just the public health and consumer trust?
When I think about that, really for me, there is an immediate direct impact on the public health and consumer trust. We see it every week that there's people being sickened and customers being sickened by products. Recalls are, it seems like they're actually increasing. If you look at it holistically, though, I mean, we are seeing a decrease in the number of recalls, but I would say the intensity at which some of these recalls are happening is becoming much more significant. We're seeing a lot more people getting sickened from some of these recalls. The most recent cheese recall that you had 2 deaths. That's very disheartening as a food industry and very scary for consumers. So there is a direct impact on that public health as well as consumer trust. Like I said, we are seeing, especially on the Listeria side, we are seeing a decrease year over year. But honestly, one's too many still. You know, and I feel like as a food industry, we still need to get better.
Totally agree with that. What are the usual suspects when it comes to these pathogens? I know you mentioned the cheese recently and stuff. Like, what are you guys seeing is really where you have to keep your eye out the most?
For my particular category of products, there's been several of them in my category of products over the last year or two. I would say Listeria from cross-contamination is probably the biggest one. And then more recently, we're starting to see Salmonella. And that kind of aligns with the new USDA guideline that was just sent out for our category of products, which their focus too as well is on Salmonella and Listeria.
So can you give us a glimpse into your company's approach, like how you mitigate these risks?
There's kind of a couple approaches. One is you kind of go on the making sure you have a plan in the event you have an issue. So kind of having those proactive plans to aggressively look at trends, make sure your recall and trace programs are in place and solid. But really, you know, kind of just looking at industry trends, you know, how are we evaluating issues that are going on with, you know, sister companies, with peer group companies, and just the industry and overall, you know, you've got to kind of be always looking at it, like looking at what could possibly be happening or new trends coming up. From a program perspective, you know, I would say we are constantly using data analytics, right? You got to analyze the data, you know, looking at your pathogen environmental monitoring results, looking at complaint trend data is really important. Focusing on industry trending, like I had just talked about, and then really understanding your process and understanding where the risk resides within your existing process. So using those scientific process validations that every company should be doing to kind of really pinpoint you to where the risk resides in your facility and how do you mitigate that. The other thing that I think that we don't focus on probably enough as an industry is really around kind of your ingredient trending, you know, looking at your suppliers, because we're very good at looking at what's in our own house, but we have to think about, you know, there's risk coming in with every ingredient that you're bringing in, and how do you kind of manage those risks, truly doing those kind of hazard analysis on those suppliers, understanding where their risk resides so that you can either manage it with them or manage it for them when needed.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a really good point as well. And you mentioned having a plan, which I think is so important to be prepared. And so I wanted to take us through a little exercise of what happens when the worst does happen and you have a recall and kind of like what's the playbook that you should start with and how do you jump into action when that happens?
Unfortunately, I can talk about it because actually just a year ago, we had a very large recall for listeria cross-contamination in our products. So we recalled 53,000 pounds of our salami. And there were lots of lessons learned from that. And one of the things I will say is, you know, our playbook really is having that robust recall plan in place. And not just the checkbox, I have a recall plan to supply to a customer, but one that truly is, you know, tested, tried, true, that you're actually testing out on a regular basis or a routine basis. For us, lessons learned that we've had was quickly deploying that recall team. In our instance, I can say from experience, issues happen on a Friday night at 5 p.m. And that's when this happened. So we were kind of having discussions with USDA on Thursday night. We were having a little bit more on Friday. And then Friday came and then Saturday came. And then all of a sudden now it's you need to do a recall. And of course, we had to initiate this recall on a Sunday. What I would say our lesson learned was is that we should have deployed the recall team probably earlier in the week when we kind of had the sense that something was a little off and that it might go right. But we didn't. And that was a big lesson learned for us, which is now in place and good. The other thing I will say is notifying your customers before that recall release is published. That is a huge thing. And again, for us, our recall, we had a meeting with USDA in Washington at, I remember it was on a Sunday at 11 a.m. And by 11:45, they were like, are you ready to initiate a recall? Yes or no? And we're like, well, we don't want to, but we know we have to. And within 45 minutes of that decision, a notice was going out and our customers were caught off guard. So really making sure your customers are aware beforehand. And then really, I think probably the bigger thing is because a recall is going to happen at some point in everyone's career. Having that plan ahead of time and being prepared and having your written plan very clearly outlined with clear accountability. You know, we always use a RACI, you know, responsible, accountable, consulted, informed. That's kind of how we approach it. But really, it's going to happen to everybody. I think the one thing that I would say is probably missing from the recall plans that I've seen, and even for us, a lesson learned was really around, okay, now the recall's been initiated. How do you handle it after? It's kind of that onslaught, right, of questions. Your customers are calling, your consumers are calling you, people are very concerned, and being prepared to kind of mitigate that onslaught of audits that comes. Everybody and their brother, from a customer perspective, wants to come in and audit your facility and audit your programs. One of the things I will say, though, is having that plan of action and having the right teams kind of outlined and ready to go and to deploy that. And how do you divide and conquer? Because even for me, I was the primary voice to the customers. You know, there are some of our larger customers, but I'm only one person. And so when you've got five customers who want to talk to you at the same time, you can't have me in every single meeting. So you have to have people that you can trust and that we can develop that clear message on what we're doing. Here's where we are. Here's what happened. Here's what we're doing to mitigate the risk is really important. And then more importantly, I will say during the event, people tend to get defensive in the facility. You get a little defensive. You feel like, okay, now I'm having to share everything. The one thing I will say, though, is transparency wins with the customer. If the more transparent you are, the better they're going to feel about what you're doing and how you're working with them. And so really, transparency does win.
I love that. I think that's the soundbite of this episode. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's really important what you were talking about with the communication. This is a situation where you kind of all hands on deck because everyone wants to know everything. And so having that in place as to, you know, how you're going to address those concerns is so super important. And then in terms of like traceability systems and technology, that's a lot of, you know, what we speak about at Trustwell. And how does that play in for you guys? And how do you use technology in this recall situation?
That has to be the number one most critical part of a recall plan is your traceability system, right? You have to be able to have a system where you can access the information quickly and that information that you're accessing is accurate. For us, at the point a year ago when we did our recall, we had a system that was not ideal, I will say, and it resulted in us having to go back to USDA and add additional product into our initial recall. Again, that doesn't make customers feel well. So having a robust traceability system and program in place that you can trust the data is really important. Even more important is testing that program frequently and not just checking boxes. Like every customer wants us to do a trace exercise, you know, a few times a year within a certain amount of time. I will say testing those systems and actually taking your most difficult thing to do, because you want to do that when you're doing it yourself so you can find out where all the holes in the system are. You do not want to find out where all the holes in your system are when you're in the middle of a recall. I can speak from experience on that.
I think that's a really good point. It's not just about the technology, but using that to test and do the mock recalls and make sure that you really are prepared in your plan and your technology and your communication. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. That was very helpful. And kind of switching gears a little bit. So, you know, when it comes to keeping RTE products safe, environmental controls are also essential. So can you explain why they're so crucial to maintaining food safety and maybe how you guys have approached that in the past?
I will say it is very critical. In most instances, it's not the actual food that's contaminated. It's the environment that's causing cross-contamination, which is the whole premise behind like your pathogen environmental monitoring program. So really kind of how are you constantly monitoring your environment to stay ahead of those cross-contamination risks, assessing your people. And what I found doing some behavioral observations where I just stand in a room and stand there for 2 hours, which people get freaked out when I do that, you'll learn a lot. You'll see how your people are reacting. You'll see the things that they're doing. You'll be able to quickly evaluate your traffic patterns. How's equipment coming in and being used throughout the room? And then how are we managing sanitation in those rooms? So most times it is not the product that is causing the issue. It is a cross-contamination risk that's causing the issue. So really in managing your environment, and it's not just, oh, make sure the floor is clean, or it's really holistic. You have to kind of take that step back and really look at your operations from start to finish, separating your raw and ready to eat, understanding and having a clear understanding of where that post-lethality point is. If you have a lethality point, you know, in our instance with the products we make, it is not a lethal process. So it expands your scope of where you're looking at where risk could be introduced. So I would say that that's probably one of the key thoughts that I have when I think about that. And then really kind of understanding the sanitation portion of controlling your environment. I say this a lot and people laugh at me, but I really feel like in the scope of recalls and with FSMA coming on board, that sanitation to me really went from being the zero to the hero. I don't know that the industry has fully embraced that yet, how critical sanitation really is. I mean, we still kind of throw sanitation on third shift. You know, they're generally the least paid people in the facility when in reality, it should be flipped. So, you know, how do we put more emphasis and focus on the sanitation programs and the people we're putting in there and giving the resources we need to ensure we have really robust sanitation programs? Because that's what maintains your environment for the most part, along with the other traffic flow people and kind of things that I talked about.
That's not always something that you hear about in our space. So I'm glad that you mentioned it because it is really important and really foundational to the safety across the board. So absolutely true. And so when you think about these things, and it sounds like you guys do so much, right? So what are your KPIs and benchmarks? Like, how do you guys measure the success of your food safety program?
The easy one is monitoring your pathogen environmental monitoring results. And I would say it's not just having the Excel list of here's all the tests I did and whether they're negative. I really am a true advocate of having them mapped out, looking at it, taking a step back and really looking at a map and understanding where you're seeing your positives, both not only on your routine program, but on any non-routine testing you're doing as well. So that's probably the first and foremost. I would say the second one probably is around your pre-op swabbing program. So most companies do swabbing of their pre-op results. I like the idea, and we do this here at Charcuterie Artisans, where we overlay the environmental results with the pre-op results. And it's interesting because when you see pre-op results trending up, We also see the regulatory results coming over. So it's really eye-opening and really good data to show people who aren't necessarily in the trenches like we are in food safety and quality. Customer and complaint data is obviously another one. You have to focus on those ones, even when it's like, oh, I got a stomach ache when I eat your product. Well, was it really a stomach ache or was there something really going on? And then if you have it, and some companies do finished product testing program results, obviously. So you have to kind of take all those metrics that you're using and overlap them to really give you the story of the health of your facility and where risk resides. When you start to see things trending up, I always say it's not a matter of when, but if something's going to happen. In our instance, we were seeing some trending going up, and a month later, we ended up in a recall. So the data is powerful, and we need to use it as an industry, and it does tell you what's going on in the health of your facility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I keyed into something that you said about living and breathing this food safety role. That's something that then you have to socialize that data internally within the rest of the organization. How do you partner with the other stakeholders? Like, how do you make sure that everybody's on board with that same culture of food safety?
It's a process in every facility that I've ever worked in, really embedding it into the lowest level in the company and even outside of the function of food safety and quality. Having your supervisors in production talk about these things and being aware of what's going on. It is scary to do as a food professional to share and open up all these results because sometimes they're not pretty. It's very nerve-wracking to share some results at times. But what I have found in my career is that, again, transparency wins, right? If you're sharing with the people throughout every function within the facility what's going on, what they can do to impact it, over time, they start to learn and then they become proactive where now they're actually advocates for it and are saying, hey, we think we might have a problem over here. It's particularly difficult to train and get people. It's around the whole food safety culture, right? It's hard to build people up to this when they're dealing with something that they can't see. If I was talking about broken glass in a facility because of pay attention to your light bulbs, it's easy because you can physically see the glass. You can't see these pathogens. And so teaching them how to think and behave and then sharing that data with them so that they can share it with their team and empower their teams to feel like they have a say in it really has been successful for us.
Looking ahead and thinking about the regulations you'd mentioned that are changing and stuff coming down, and how do you guys stay ahead of all of that and make sure that you're ahead of all the trends and you're ready to go on all this kind of stuff? I know it's quite a lot of work.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. My team in general, and actually because we've built a really great food safety culture within the company, we have everybody looking at this stuff, you know, so even just the news posts that go out every single day are things that people can get engaged with and feel like they're in the know in the facility. And then they ask questions and figure out how they can do things. My team in particular, we're involved with trade organizations. We do some networking with some of our competitive partners. We deploy some consultants who are across different organizations to kind of keep our finger on the pulse. I would say we also leverage our microbiology lab that we do, you know, where we're sending all our testing to kind of say, hey, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? Going to conferences. So there's lots of different ways we're doing it. And fortunately, because we have a regulatory agency on site full time all the time, we tap into that quite often as well. So it's kind of a multi-pronged approach to kind of understanding what's going on in industry. And we have partners that we can work with when we have questions ourselves to say, hey, we're hearing this, we're seeing this. What are you feeling? Are you feeling the same thing? What's going on? So it's definitely a multi-pronged approach to kind of understanding and keeping on top of everything.
I think you definitely need that. So what emerging technologies, innovations, you know, gets you excited about the future of food safety?
Oh, the super nerdy question. I like it. So for me, I would say, you know, this is like where I get kind of super jazzed up on any moment when you're looking at new technologies and even new programs and processes. I am definitely a proponent of deploying new digital solutions and technologies to be able to help us grow as an organization and continually improve our processes. We've been experimenting a lot with like phage treatments and biophage, which acts as a competitive environmentally to any of the pathogens that might be growing on, like Listeria, for example. We've had some pretty good success with that. We have been doing some experimentation with ozone, whether it's putting ozone in water, doing environmental gas passing of particular areas, whether it's a large area or a small area that we put on a piece of equipment if we feel like we have some issues. We're doing some hydrogen peroxide mist now that we're having some pretty good success with. So, you know, there's a lot of cool things always coming down. What I challenge my team on, and part of why I ask my team to kind of always be out there looking what's going on, is to say, hey, let's try. You know, like if we see something, let's try it. What harm can it do? But there's definitely every month something new coming out. I don't think we have a silver bullet on anything. I think any of the times you're approaching, especially pathogens, you're going to have to use multiple tools to kind of get at what you're trying to get at. But there's definitely some cool technologies coming out right now. I'm actually working with a company whose spectracidal X-ray something camera, I can't remember what it was called, but it's basically like using a camera in some way to detect different pathogens, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if it's fully developed yet, but, you know, I said, yeah, I'll work with you. You know, like if I can help companies test things and do different things, I'm all game for it. But I think it's not going to stop. I think with our consumers being more aware of what's going on in industry and expecting more from us, we're going to have to continue to challenge ourselves as an industry to continually get better. We can't maintain status quo. And it really requires us to be looking for the next big thing, right? To continually improve our processes.
I agree with you. I think it's only going to get more and more precise on this stuff. So yeah, it sounds really cool, the stuff you guys are working on. So kind of leaving the recall behind, I have just a few more questions for you on a personal level. So you said you mentor a lot of your team. What is a good piece of advice that you would give to someone who is just starting out in the food industry, specifically, you know, with food safety and quality?
That's a good question. And honestly, it's right up here because at one point I was actually doing a lot of recruiting when I worked at General Mills. I would say the biggest piece of advice is I don't care what degree you have. You know, I don't care whether it's a chemical engineering or a biology or microbiology or whether you're a master's or PhD. Honestly, when you're coming into industry, that's just your admission ticket, right? You have to come in and be humble. Respect the people who are actually working in a facility because they have a lot of good boots on the ground kind of knowledge, right? So there's the science and then there's the practicality and here's what's really going on or here's what I could help you with. What I have found in my career is that when I leverage people in the facility and didn't think of myself as being more than what I was, they were very helpful. They would take me under their wing. They would show me everything. They would teach me. And they have great ideas. Anytime we have a problem in the facility, even when we were working through this recall and trying to assess our environment to figure out where the heck this was coming from, honestly, it was my maintenance guys that I said, I don't want to talk to my engineers. I don't want to talk to you guys. I want to talk to the maintenance guys. And we sat there and we got in the room for 4 hours straight. And, you know, not in the room, in the actual processing room. And I'm like, where do you see issues? Where do you think there could be harborage? Where do you think things could go wrong? And they gave the best ideas. So I would say be humble. The other thing I would say is have a really good spirit of curiosity, right? Explore, learn, touch, feel, figure out things. Go online and just search things. You know, don't wait to be told exactly what to do. Take that spirit of curiosity and go figure things out and you'll be amazed at what you'll learn. Being told what to do and actually figuring out on your own is much more rewarding.
That's great advice. I think it's great advice kind of for anybody, especially starting a new career, but I love that. Okay, one more question for you. So who out there in the food safety world would you love to go to lunch with?
So for me, I would say it's Dr. Weidman at Cornell. I love listening to him talk. I love his approach. He's just very matter of fact. It's the microbiology part of it for me, which is kind of where I nerd out that I really like. And so I love listening to him and listening how, you know, like when whole genome sequencing was coming on board and listening to how he interprets that and how we can use that data and how he's working with industry and regulators to use the data. For me, I really enjoy listening to him, and I've had the opportunity to actually go to lunch with him a few times. I mean, every time I go with him, it's amazing, and he just kind of humbles you back down and really gets my wheels going. So I really love spending time with him, and like I said, I did it a couple times, but it's been a long time. So if I could do it again, I'd do it again soon.
Awesome. That is great. Is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to share? Any other stories, insights for our listeners?
What I would say is when you're thinking about this issue of environmental pathogens, really We have to get out of our sandbox of just checking boxes, right? When you're putting together environmental monitoring program, a lot of companies, mostly because when I was at Rich Products, I was in charge of over 5,000 raw material suppliers and 150 contract manufacturers. They're putting programs in because they're being told to put programs in. We need to put programs in because we want to do the right thing and we want to find things in our facility. We really need to build those programs on a seek and destroy, with a seek and destroy approach. You know, I don't know how many companies that I've gone into when I was doing audits or just working with them, and they were, you know, they'd say, well, we've had no findings for the last 5 years. To me, that's a red flag. I'm like, and I would say that to them and they would kind of be taken back. And really, you should be finding things. Now, should you be finding things every single time you swab? Absolutely not. But you should be finding things occasionally. No processing environment is clean. Every day is a new point in time. And so, yes, you clean and your facility's clean. But the minute people start walking in there or equipment comes in or tools come in or carts come in, now you're introducing the potential for pathogens to enter in your environment. So every day is a new day. So we really need to kind of take that seek and destroy approach to that. I would also say it's not only that, but when we're doing sanitation, when you look at your sanitation program, again, not a checkbox activity, we should be taking the approach of looking at getting our equipment at each sanitation cycle back to basic conditions. So how do you take everything down to the lowest level and maintain it at that level? Because that's when harborages and niches come into play. And then like I had talked about earlier, I would say I challenge everybody to do some behavioral observations in your facility. Go into an area, and I know we do monthly self-assessments, but go into an area and just stand in one spot for at least an hour. You will be amazed at the risk you will identify quickly. And then that helps you get better and helps you build your programs. And then you can focus on those particular areas that you've identified to help grow and continue to educate your team. And that's the whole spirit of food safety culture.
Right. And it can always be improved, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a continuous improvement cycle.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you so much for coming on, Michelle. I've learned so much from talking to you. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being on.
Thanks to our listeners. And we'll definitely catch you next time on Food Tech Talk. And until then, I hope you have a good rest of your day. Thank you. Thank you for joining us for another bite-sized nugget of Food Tech Talk, supply chain insights from farm to fork. To learn more about Trustwell and its technology platform that connects product formulation, nutrition analysis, and compliant labeling with traceability, recall readiness, and supply chain transparency, please visit www.trustwell.com. Thanks for listening.